I'm still an addict. My name is Usman. I'm from the greater Newark area of New Jersey. My home group is the Double Trouble group of Narcotics Anonymous. We meet religiously every Tuesday night for 2 hours. And that meeting was founded by a very special lady who since moved on to freedom and ease. Her name was Stephanie W. And she taught me that humility is not me thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less. And that's why I asked you to turn to someone and give them that hug. I want to get a few preliminary things out of the way. First, in order of importance, I want to thank Almighty God for getting us all here. I got down here early Wednesday through the efforts of my good friend Eric, and I want to thank him. I had a nice trip down here, except for when I got to Raleigh. I got on the smallest plane ever created. The seats were so small, you could only get one butt cheek on the seat. The pilot said, if it's too hot or cold, just tap me on the shoulder. But I want to thank you for your efforts, Eric, you know. I want to thank anybody and everybody that had anything whatsoever to do with putting this fine convention on. Give them a nice hand once again. And I got here and I felt a little disconnected. Then I saw Brooklyn roll up in the house. I saw Money Making Manhattan. Then my Chicago connection came. Philly rolled in. Baltimore. I saw friends from all over roll in. And pretty soon, in short order, I didn't feel alone anymore. I felt real blessed and fortunate to be given this opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope at Serenity Fest number 18. Now, a fest. Some of y'all don't know what a fest is. I didn't. I looked it up, so don't feel different. A fest is like a serendipitous occasion. It's like a celebration when somebody ought to go out and kill a fatted calf or something. You know, it's an opportunity to come together and have a good goddamn time. That's what a fest is, and so that's what I thoroughly intend to do, to really enjoy myself up here. Someone asked me, when you do something like this, when you're up there in front of so many people, how do you feel? Do you have to pee? How do you feel? Do you feel nervous and what have you? And what I need to share with you, because everybody gets a turn, you do get feelings up here. You feel like you're beside yourself, but I've learned through experience that that's the experience you feel when your help comes. And I need to let you know that my help is here, and I feel real good about that, you know? In fact, when you don't get that feeling, you need to run like hell, because you're on your own, you know? I want to thank some special people who were gracious enough to form a circle and pray with me to invite God into this evening's affair, and they know exactly who they are, and I appreciate that. I want to thank Phil Owen. He knows what he did and why I'm thanking him. I want to thank my little sister Karen S. from Raleigh, North Carolina. This was a real special treat to just be able to spend some time with her, and I want to really thank Salam and Lukman and Jaleel and Tyrone and Carl from Milwaukee and different people who are near and dear to me for consistently showing up in my life and giving me the support I need. Now, having said that, it's time for my disclaimer. You know, I usually give a little disclaimer because when you do something like this, the only way I know how to do it is to get clean out of the way. And when I get out of the way and just let my spirit flow, I can't really be responsible for editing myself and double clutching and second guessing, and I just have to let it flow. And so sometimes I might curse, I might fart up here, I might do a lot of things. But I don't want anybody to leave here tonight, and if you're asked how was the Saturday night speaker, don't respond by saying, rarely have I heard such a beautiful exposition of the vagaries of addiction, with particular emphasis on the Narcotics Anonymous modality of recovery. Except for an apparent inability on behalf of the speaker to avoid the propensity to prolifically profanate his image, I know how to speak, but sometimes the literature gives me the permission to speak in what is called no uncertain terms. And sometimes when I'm describing my disease or active addiction, I need to tell you in no uncertain terms just how it was. All right, so with having said that, I'm going to segue right into my story, and I want to kind of do it in and around the notion of a serenity fest. You know, when you do this type of thing, all you really have is your story. Sometimes people say, well, what are you going to share this time? I'm going to share the same goddamn thing I shared the last time you heard me. I ain't got time to get no new story. This is it. Well, you see me, that's what you get, my story. But sometimes what you can do is try to artfully weave it around whatever the theme of the convention might be. For example, tonight's theme is Serenity Fest, and I want to tell you how it is that I can stand before you a serene man, a peaceful man, a joyous, happy, free man. You know, I had a sponsor, he was from Manhattan, his name was Will P., and he told me that his sponsor taught him that recovery is like sex. If you're not enjoying it, you're not doing something right. So I want to tell you about how I came into this world very serene, how I lost that peace and tranquility and serenity, and how through the grace of God, His unmerited favor, His divine intervention, and Narcotics Anonymous, I got it back. All right, that's where we're going. There was a time circa 1950. I was born in Newark, New Jersey, and I came into this world a flat-out happy little boy. Yes, I was. I was happy about the whole thing. Just a little happy-ass boy. I could laugh and dance and skip and sing with no prompting, with no outside validation. Didn't really need toys. This is long before Nintendo and Sega Genesis and all the high-tech stuff we have today anyway. Play by myself and be happy. Me and my imaginary friend. Who you playing with? My friend. I don't see nobody. That's my imaginary friend. Fuck it. The point being, I didn't need permission to be happy. Nobody had to give me a green light to be happy. I was already happy. I was still real close to God. God breathes life into each of us, and I still felt God's loving arms all around me. The world was a nice, safe, nurturing environment for me. And by degrees, my peace started to get broken. Sometimes it would be members of my whole own family that would break my peace. misinformed people who had already had their peace broken. They would see my little happy self playing. They said, "What's your little black ass so happy about? You ain't got nothing to be happy about." Don't you know we're black? Don't you realize we live on the wrong side of the tracks? Didn't anybody tell you we come from a broken home? Because kids don't realize that the home is broken unless you tell them. And by degrees, I started losing my peace. And I went out into the wider world. I went to school and seeking education. I'll never forget. I remember I was in about the fifth grade, and I was sitting behind little Mary Ann, and she had her long blonde pigtails, and I had never seen anything like that, and I started playing with her pigtails. She didn't appreciate that, and she turned around. She said, "Get your little nigga hands off my pigtails." I said, "Wow, that's a new word." I went to the teacher. I said, "Teacher, what's a nigger?" She said, "Oh, you come from a long line of niggers." "Yes, you do." I said, "All righty then." And I went home, and my mother asked, she said, "Well, how was school?" I said, "Great." "So what'd you learn today?" "Well, I learned that I'm a nigger. You're a nigger too, Mom, you know. And, in fact, we come from a long line of niggers, you know. That's what I learned." And I looked at the look on her face, and it was like she had this attitude of, "Well, I guess it's time to expose you to the realities of life." Now, when you look into the dictionary says that God is the ultimate reality. God is the answer to every question, and that's where I had been. But now, people in society were exposing me to what they call the real world. And the more I got exposed to the real world, the less I liked the hand that I had been given to play. I don't know if you can identify with looking at your hand and saying, "I don't like this hand." God, why you give me this hand to play? And this is important because early in life, man makes habits, and later on in life, that habits make the man. So because my peace was broken and I didn't like the hand that I had been dealt, I began to, by degrees, move away from God and the only real permanent thing in life. And I picked up illusion. Because anything but God is straight up illusion. The only permanent real thing in the world is God. So I began at an early age to buy into things that wouldn't last, that couldn't sustain me, and couldn't nurture me like God had been doing. I bought into illusion. I bought into fantasy. I got the habit of watching cartoons, and I loved it. I loved hanging out in fantasy. It worked for me. It was a temporary fix. It was my first temporary high. Fantasy. Even today, I can pick it up. So I started watching all the little cartoons, and I'd watch Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. But you need to know that even as a little tyke, I was a few flapjacks short of a full stack. I'm talking about the literature says, sir, we can, if we really do some work, we can spot our disease long before the substance even came on the scene. So I was a few French fries short of a happy meal as a little boy. I'm trying to tell you something here. So when I watched the cartoons and I watched Snow White, I saw little skis on a hoe stroke with seven little tricks. And she worked them all. Sneezy and Groovy worked them all. When I watched Goldilocks and the Three Bears, I saw B&E. The Bear family never invited her happy little ass up into their home. She broke in. She broke in and like a good little addict, she tried the hot porridge and then the cold porridge, and then she concocted this little porridge speedball, went upstairs and nodded out. That's how she got busted. Yogi Bear was a rip-off artist with his co-conspirator, Boo-Boo. Ran all through the park just ripping people off. Wile E. Coyote gave new meaning to the second step. Some of y'all gonna have to let that marinate until you get to the second step. Do some step work up in here, and you know why people were laughing. My favorite character was Popeye. I liked Popeye. Popeye had those big attic arms. Wasn't your superhero. He couldn't fly. He didn't have a cape or anything. And for most of the cartoon, he got beat down bad. But in true addict fashion, he would go into surrender mode. He'd tip you off. He said, "That's all I can stand. I can't stand no more now." Then he'd reach into his stash, right? And he'd whip out this silver can which had this green leafy vegetative substance in it, and he'd squeeze the can and the spinach would jump up, and he would promptly proceed to smoke that spinach in his pipe. Oh yeah, he smoked that spinach. Oh yes, he did. But some interesting stuff happened once he hit the spinach. All of a sudden, he had self-acceptance. He said, "I am who I am. I damn not Popeye the Sailor Man." There ain't gonna be no more ass whipping. Little skinny-ass olive oil started looking good. He stopped talking shit. He turned to her and said, "Well, blow me down." So early in life, man makes habits, and later on in life, the habits make the man. So I'm looking, I'm watching these cartoons. I say, "Okay, I see. If you want love, do like Snow White. Do with Lottie, Dottie, and everybody. Somebody got something you want, right? Okay, I got it. Do the Goldilocks. Break in. Take it. Be like Yogi. Don't leave somebody. Leave something that's yours. And if life is beating you down, pull a Popeye. Find you something that will allow you to fix a feeling with a feeling." Then I picked up comparison. Spent a lot of time running around wishing I had somebody else's hand to play. I'm telling you how the disease was attacking me even when I was small. I'd rather be up the street in another household, at the Miller household, with Billy Miller's sister Gloria and Mr. and Mrs. Miller. Because when I played up there, Mrs. Miller said, "Little Usman, are you hungry?" I said, "Hell yeah, Mrs. Miller." She said, "Well, what would you like? Bologna and cheese, tuna fish, what do you want?" And I said, "Get out of town. I remember running home saying, "Mom, listen, you are not going to believe what they have up at the Miller household." She said, "What, son?" I said, "Choices." She said, "Oh, boy, you crazy. Don't act like you don't have choices here. Now, you know good and goddamn well, you can go over there and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and if that's not to your liking, you can have a jelly with your peanut butter sandwich." Only problem was, in my household, we weren't talking about Skippy, Jiffy, none of that. We had this big silver oil tanker size, industrial strength size, big ass silver tub of industrial strength peanut butter. Had like an oil slick on the top. You had to kind of jump start it. Shit. Fucking get that shit going. To like a spreadable consistency. You had to jumpstart that shit. Non-discriminating peanut butter. Made no difference whether your bread was white, whole wheat, pumpkin, nickel, rye. Guaranteed to fuck your bread up. Peanut butter. The best you could hope for would be like a little peanut butter jelly ball. You just had to mush that shit all together. I can still hear my mother saying, "Just eat it. It's all going to the same place. Just eat it, boy. If you don't like that, go over there and hack your little happy ass a chunk of that cheese off. Oh, welfare cheese. This long, great cardboard box of welfare cheese. One end would be yellow, the other end would be this color. Orange. Oh, hard orange-ass cheese. You need a butcher knife to cut that here. Like cheese." I was in a comparison. Then one day we got matching furniture. I don't know if you ever been so poor that matching furniture is a big deal in your house. Where you go from just being glad to have furniture to everything matches. And I'll never forget the moving people moved the furniture, people moved the matching furniture in, and in no time flat, my mother promptly proceeded to ziplock everything. Nobody's natural ass has ever touched fabric in my household. Furniture that outlived whole generations. We just keep passing it on down. And it's just as new as the first day it came in. We moved up and got some carpeting. As soon as the carpet was laid, my mother said, "Shot this plastic runner straight through the middle of the house. That's where I first learned to stay on the path." She said, "Boy, I suggest you stay on the path." So these are my earliest recollections of loving things and using people. So it should come as no small surprise that in short order, a little while later, I'd be loving things like little glassine bags and loving things like little plastic vials with colorful caps. All during this time, I was trying to be an average Joe, seeking the American dream. I wanted to be a family man. I wanted to be a black man. Had an Afro big as this convention center at one time. I know it don't look like it now, but I wanted to be a father man, a brother man, a working man, a professional man. But in the process, this other character was created. I call him Attic Man. Attic Man was a bad motherfucker. He could jump over abandoned buildings in a single bound. But first, he was like little Attic Boy. We were cool like that. I considered myself what we call a weekend warrior. And I used to talk that good Bobby Brown stuff. This is my prerogative. This is my money. You see, I work for this money. When you work for this money, then you can tell me what to do with my money. But since I work for this money, if I want to break off a little something-something on the weekend, that's my prerogative. So me and little attic boy were cool. He'd only jump out on the weekend. We were coochie crunch. Then he started growing up. How do I know? Because he started sassing. He jumped out. I said, wait a minute, it's Tuesday. He said, fuck that. We ain't into the days of the week no more. Look here, buddy, it's going to be some changes around here. I've progressed. I'm what you call full blown now. And from now on, you're going to take your orders from me. In fact, before you do anything, I suggest you check with me. You want to go to work? See how I feel about that. Your cousin getting married? Check with me first. I'll let you know if we're going and how long we're staying. As a matter of fact, don't make any more purchases without checking with me. I'll let you know how much money we have for other things. And by degrees, I began to lose my mind. I knew I was losing my mind because I was talking to myself. I started trying on new stuff like sheer willpower and gritty determination. I'm not going to use the thing. I'm not going to use it. Now that's it. And I found myself doing things like crazy things like trying to hide my money from me. I don't believe you heard me. I'm talking about the same man who is hiding the money is trying to hide it from himself as if he can't find the money he just hid from himself. And I'd get little envelopes. I mean, I actually did this shit. I'd get little envelopes and I'd segregate my money. And I'd put some money in the envelope and seal it up. Take a big magic mark and say, rent. Even had the nerve to have a subtitle, most important. And I'd take another one and it'd say, gas and electric. Another one would say, telephone. All the way down to get this, miscellaneous. Land insanity. Attic man would jump out, he said, listen, you better open up one of them. You open up one of them, or we're going to open them all up all night long. This disease is insidious. Because it talks to you in your own voice. Sometimes I've managed to stop using. You know, you run out of money and shit. And Attic man said, when last time you used? I said, oh, about 2-3 days now. Mm-hmm. He said, and they said you couldn't stop. Personally, I always believed in you. So since it's quite apparent now that you can't stop when you want to stop, let's go get that shit, man. And I'd be off to the races again. You talking that wolfman stuff to my wife? Look, you better take this money, lock the door. Now you're going to hear some hollering and screaming. Or whatever you do, don't you open that door. Attic man jump out, he said, look, Jack, If you don't get that money, they're going to need dental records to even recognize your wife. I remember doing my active addiction, I thought I was a little bit of a Rudolph Vaseline. I was like this Rudolph Vaseline character, right? I ain't had no real rap or nothing, you know. I just get some drugs, take you down, girl, you know. Hey, come on, I got that shit. We're going to the shady rest, let's go now. And we get there, right? And she said, I'm going to go freshen up. Don't freshen up, girl. I'm going to just do a little something here. Go on, I'll be right here when you get back. And she come out, she said, I'm ready now, Daddy. But when she went in, I was there. When she came out, Attic Man was there. She said, I'm ready now, Daddy. Attic Man said, you might as well suit the fuck up. You better take a hit of this shit. I don't know why you brought your broke ass here in the first place. You ain't got no money. You ain't getting no wood. Better take a hit of this shit and go on now. I tried the social acceptability piece. I did. Used to go to work in a shirt and tie. Had a little attaché case, little boxy Cadillac Seville back in the day. Used to be able to drive up to the drive-up teller. This is for you socially acceptable addicts. Used to drive up to the drive-up teller. And the teller said, hello, Mr. Professional Man. How are you? Very well, thank you. Doing just fine. So would that be the full extent of your withdrawal? That looked quite nicely. Thank you very much. You're new here, aren't you? You better get to know me. I'm here all the time. And I'd leave. A little while later, I'd be back. She said, oh, we're back, are we? Yes, yes, we're back, we're back. Ray Charles can see we're back. Some unforeseen contingencies arose that are going to require my immediate attention. You better give me 3, 5, 2. Make that 20 times as much money. Hurry up, too. Gotta get to the bottom of this. This time I burn rubber getting away. With 20 times as much money now, because of progression, I'd be back in 1/20th of the time. Only this time, my tires are all crooked. I got my high beams on now. My jaw got a life of its own. She says, is there anything else I can do for you? I said, yeah, just lean over here. Think what you, just do your motherfucking job is what you can do. Don't be asking me I'm not having a nice day. And how are you doing? Fuck all that. Just give me my... Who trained you in here? Don't you see me taking all my money out of here? I want to pull my blame thrower out now and blame her for all my ills, all my self-created drama. The geographicals didn't work. Nobody told me wherever I'd go, there I'd find myself. I used to go all over the place. I remember once I went to Paris. You see, that's why I ain't no addict. Shit. Look at this. I'm in Paris. I'm going to see the Mona Lisa. I'm going to see her ass. Yes, I am. I'm going to see the Mona Lisa and the Eiffel Tower. And I'm going to see all of this stuff. The only problem is in France, the French are funny people. They drink wine with everything. You order a bowl of cereal. They go, what kind of wine would you like with that cereal? And nobody told me that one was wet, one is dry. Bottom line, they both get you high. Alcohol is a drug. So if you an addict, don't make the mistake of thinking you can mess around with starter drugs and be all right, you know. So I'm over there in France and I picked up my starter drug, right? By noon, I'm drunk at the Georgia Pines. The little tour went one way. Attic Man jumped out speaking French. Bonjour, monsieur. Comment ça va? Ça va bien? Who said true, mon petit brother? Hell way.
mademoiselle, tu es très jolie. Avez-vous du cocaïne? High as hell, way over there. Don't know no goddamn body. Wide open in France. I don't know how I made it back. Got back here, and I already told you about Wile E. Coyote, so I had no problem making the same mistake expecting a different result. So I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. I was home with my wife before she escaped, right? And this is before the escape. I was home with her, and we were watching our TVs. We had to watch both of them, because we had one with picture, no sound, and one with sound and no picture. We was watching our TVs, and this commercial came on, and it said, come down to Jamaica, where we'll love you. Come down to Jamaica, where the water is blue. And this woman got up out the water in this wet t-shirt. I said, oh, that's it. We're going to Jamaica. White sandy beach and the blue water. We're going to lay on the beach and kick these habits. That's what we're going to do. Yeah, we made it there. Made it down there. I'll never forget. I came out of the cabana, and my wife was there with these two pina coladas. I said, are you, you done lost your mind in somebody else's. Don't you remember what happened in France? But because they had these little parasols, right, and these cherries. She said, look at them. They're adorable. Aren't they the most adorable thing you've ever seen? And you know, Annis don't need much prompting. In no time flat, they began to look adorable to me. And I knocked back one of those adorable little pina coladas, forgetting that in Jamaica, the rum they use is that 151 jet fuel. Same thing they fly their jets with. Same thing we used to burn with. That's what they put in their rum. And I knocked back one of them little adorable little pina coladas. An addict man jumped out. He said, yes, mom! And say, yes, mom! I feel real happy now, boy. Thought you were true with me, huh? You can't do it. You can't keep me behind the damn eight ball with your white sandy beach in the blue water. No, boy. Now move your move across the house and get me a nice big spot Jamaican split right now. So by now, I'm in a flat-out war with myself. Huh? We're talking about peace. I was a long way away from a serenity fest. I was a long way from being serene with me. I was that flat out war with myself. I'm not talking about your declared wars like World War I, World War II. I'm talking about that undeclared war that addicts find themselves in. Not the type where you drop the bomb like in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. I'm talking about where they drop bombs on you like Hulk and Bullock. Yeah, wars like wherever you from, you still got people caught up in this undeclared war. I was riding down the street and I said, ooh, look at that hand-to-hand combat. And the person riding with me said, what you talking about? I said, listen, my man just cut. He said, I ain't seen nothing. I said, that's because you ain't never been in battle. You don't know what to look for. And today it's a cold war. It's a cold war, and everybody's sitting in here. Casualties of war. But the good news is we're survivors of the war. Yeah, so look, when you see yourself struggling, don't be hard on yourself, because everybody in here is suffering from post-traumatic war syndrome. Yeah, that's right. Just like in Vietnam, when the GI wanted to make love, they had the little Vietnamese girl. She said, sucky, sucky, fucky, fucky for a candy bar. Big GI Joe. Now, if you're an addict, you understand that. Because a whole lot of stuff went down
for a hit where we came from. So it's a reason why I had a struggle with committed love. There's a reason why addicts struggle with romance. It's a reason why some people still come in here trying to get paid for love. Because animals, living skills rather, were reduced to the animal level. That's why some of us today wake up with drug dreams. Like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? I just had a dream, man. I was back in the war. It was so real. You know, the good news is we've been delivered from the war. The good news is that the war is over. The good news is we are all the recipients of God's grace. Grace, unmerited favor, divine intervention. That's why as long as I live, I'll say thank God for God and thank God for NA. I thank God for bringing me to Narcotics Anonymous, and I thank Narcotics Anonymous for in turn bringing me into a richer, fuller, more deep appreciation of the God of my understanding. So the end for me wasn't pretty. I'm not going to glamorize my using. The end wasn't pretty. In the end, I was greasier than a gas station mop. I was tore up from the flow up. I was dirt, finished, waxed and polished. All the while, I thought I looked good. I remember after a particularly long run, I made it to, because you know, I used to, being in the war, you ate when you could eat. You'd look up because you were so deep into the war with yourself. The war of self-hatred. The war of low self-esteem. The war of low self-worth. Now some say self-hatred is a bad term, but think what you must have felt about yourself to put you through what you put yourself through. Very few people, when they were in school and the teacher said, what do you want to be when you grow up, Barry? Said, me? Well, teacher, I thoroughly expect to grow up and be Barry back and forth. That's me, teacher. I just want to run back and forth all goddamn night, teacher. And what about you, Joe? Well, for me, teacher, I just want to be Joe Pincushion. Just the best little pincushion I can be, sticking myself all day and night. And Wanda, what about you? Well, for me, teacher, I'd like to become Wanda Hostrom. That's my goal. None of us said that. So for long stretches of time, I wouldn't even eat. A meal for me was a little pack of Little Debbie's. I don't know if they got them down here. A little color, 25-cent color juice. A bag of potato chips. It was a holiday barbecue chips. It was a meal. I remember showing up one day at my aunt's house. I said, that's right. My aunt lived right around the corner. And I knocked on the door. And my aunt came to the door and she looked out the window. She said, wait a minute. She called my uncle. She said, Walker, come here. She said, look like Annie's boy. And my uncle came to the window and he said, Jesus, Joseph, Mary and the mule, boy, what the fuck happened to you? What you need to do is open the door and invite a brother in and ask him if he'd like to join you for dinner or something. And they said, oh, we ain't cooked tonight. No, we ain't cooked tonight, did we, baby? No, we ain't cooked tonight.
I said, listen, it don't have to be matching food. You ain't even got to heat it up. You don't even have to nuke it. Just throw some shit on a plate. That's how hungry I am, you know. I mean, in the end, it was really, really bad for me. So I was so glad to get to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I thank God much for H&I. I say that all the time. I'm an H&I kind of guy. I'm grateful to the addicts who brought the life-saving message of recovery to me. You know, I'm real grateful, you know. The only thing I want to say about treatment is they steered me to Narcotics Anonymous. They said, listen, when you get out of here, run like hell to an NA meeting. Don't pass, go, don't stop and collect $200. Run like hell to an NA meeting. And I did that. And I sat on an intensive care row right up front. And I was open to suggestions, you know. And I was whining and talking about what I thought and how I felt. And they said, listen, we ain't interested in how you feel. Put your thinking and your feeling on the shelf. Because if you still in here based on how you feel, you're wasting some valuable get high time. That's the horse you rode up in here on, ain't it? Trying to feel good 24/7. Newsflash. You ain't always gonna feel good. Newsflash. Your thinking ain't the best. So don't be so impressed with yourself. Make 90 meetings in 90 days. Learn to listen and listen to learn. Get a sponsor and use them. Sponsor somebody reading from a later page who can better help you understand what you're confronted with at your stage. Get committed. I said, what's that? They said, well, it's like the old Farmer Gray story. Farmer Gray's son asked him at breakfast, Dad, what's commitment? Farmer Gray said, son, you see, this breakfast consists of ham and eggs. That means two of our farm animals participated, the pig and the chicken. The chicken was involved, but the pig was committed. Because his ass was on the line. They said, get serious about this process. And they got me involved with step work right away. I want to say that again. They got me involved with step work right away. Ain't nobody going no cliche run on my ass. Well, it's a pace, not a race. No, no, no. Don't be peeing in newcomers' ears like that. Work the steps with them. The steps are our survival kit. They are the fix against a deadly disease. So we got involved with some step work right away, because you got to get busy if you're going to get into this new spiritual way of life. When I came here, they told me the solution was spiritual in nature. That's a deep piece for somebody who all of his answers were material in nature by now. If I couldn't see it, feel it, fuck it, taste it, shoot it, wear it, drive it, eat it, fuck it. All my solutions were material in nature. So they said, you need to work some steps. You need to work some steps so that you can get in touch with what you're up against. The disease of addiction. You are blessed to be in Narcotics Anonymous. You're blessed because Narcotics Anonymous has a first step second to none. It allows for one-stop shopping. You don't have to go to 20 12-step fellowships. You can come right here, and whatever rocks your boat, you can get your needs met. Because we deal with the disease of addiction. And addiction is a pathological or sick relationship to any mind or mood-altering experience with life-damaging consequences. You need to know when you use it. You don't even know when you're using, Usman. I said, well, how would I know when I'm using? Well, the first thing you'll see is you'll lose your consequential thinking ability. Whenever you lose the ability to consider the consequences of your action, you'll use it. I said, well, how am I supposed to get this consequential thinking ability?
They said, keep coming back. It's a process. Keep coming back. It's a process to be restored to sanity. Things we talk about in here, sanity, recovery, these are fluid concepts. You don't just get them, have them, and get recovered up with an ED on the end and no longer fit the literature, and all of a sudden you're a power greater than yourself. It's like breathing. I can't breathe enough yesterday to hold me over today, and no matter how much I breathe today, it's suggested I take a few gulps of air tomorrow if I want to be here. I got to come to believe, and coming to believe is a process. It's a process. Sometimes you got to rock with a process. Sometimes you want to get better, but you just don't know if you can. You need to get better, but you just don't know if you will. It's just like if you see a little girl jumping double dutch. First they got to come to the rope, and then they got to rock with it. Right? They got to come, then they got to come to, and then when they come to believe, they jump in. It's the same process with us. We got to come to believe that we can get with the most obvious symptoms of our disease. Right? And then when our belief is grown, when you are really ready to put down all of these little spiritual water shots, thinking the man is your higher power, the woman is your higher power, money, property, prestige is your higher power, social acceptability is your higher power, your clean time is your higher power. There's a reason why they say none of these things equal recovery, because nothing equals recovery. Recovery is a process. That's why they say when your belief has grown, you'll tire of all of these material solutions to your spiritual dilemma. You'll tire of all of these outside answers to your inside questions. You'll start to grow up and understand that God, Almighty God, is the answer to every question. You'll begin to know where your greatest source of strength and courage is. And then you'll be ready to make a decision. That's why in the third step it says, for the first time since that first hour, we're ready to make a decision. Not because the mate said so, the therapist, the judge, the probation department, but because you got a God in your life, you can make a decision. Because if you don't have God in your life, trust and believe, you cannot make a decision. You might think you're making a decision, but the reality is your decision will really be based on something else, an illusion. Because the only way you can make a decision that implies the ability to say yes and the ability to say no. And if you don't have God in your life, you can't say no. You could walk around sharing like Shakespeare, giving lip service to the idea that you're spiritual, that you're religious, and this, that, and the other, but the proof is in the way we live. We know how spiritual you are when you make leaves. We'll see how spiritual you are when you buckle, when your man leaves. We know how spiritual you are when we see how you handle the fact that you fired. Downsizing. We'll know whether you're from the not really tribe. God, your will be done, but not really. We'll know by whether you put a question mark where God put a period when people die. So the third step says, yeah, if you made this decision, if you're really sincere, then you're ready for your first honest self-appraisal. Some people get to the third step and say, yeah, I did this, I turned it over, I flipped it like a flapjack, you know. My will is my this and my life is my that. You ain't even done your first honest self-appraisal. Usman, you need to do an honest self-appraisal. I needed to be introduced to me. That was a big part of my problem. I could never see me coming.
It's hard to get better when you can't see yourself coming. When you're running around talking stupid shit like, when you gonna stop that? Oh, I don't know. You think you're gonna ever get better? I don't know. You gonna use again? I don't know. I just don't know. Because I could never see myself coming. I would show up unexpected. And the next thing you know, you're sitting on the side of the bed, dusted, busted, and thoroughly disgusted. Talking crazy shit like, I don't know what happened. I remember getting paid, then it was like abracadabra drugs. I don't know where they came from. I got in the car, and the car drove itself. I meant to come, really. But you can't see yourself coming. Got to get introduced to your patterns, your drive, your instinctive behavior, your routine compulsive acts. Got to sort through the confusion and contradiction in your life. And just because we're talking about a fearless and searching moral inventory doesn't mean that I got to give a morally deficient inventory. I got a disease. That's my diagnosis. Doesn't mean that I'm a morally deficient person. That's why this is the only step that tells you what the purpose is and what the purpose is not. It says it's not about a long litany of a binge of emotional sorrow about what a bad person I am. That's dangerous. I'm just trying that the purpose is for me to sort through the confusion and contradiction in my life. So my sponsor says, I don't want to hear a whole bunch about you when you didn't even have morals. I want you to sort through for real the contradiction and confusion in your life. Like, for example, I don't want to know about every woman you ever been with. All I want to know is how did you consistently mistake women for God? Women, how did you man after man after man after man after man after man mistake man for God? How did you mistake money, property, and prestige for God, Usman? How did you mistake social sensibility for God? Let's give you the ability to see yourself coming. And through that fourth and fifth step process, I came away with the proper order of my relationship. God, me, and everything else is pretty much conversation. I came away with a sense of priorities. I remember my mother used to always say, you need to get your priorities in order. My priorities in order. Just give me $20. I'll show you some of my priorities in order. That's my priority. Give me $20. And if you want to get entirely ready to get better, get down to the exact nature of what's going on with you, which is your self-centered fear. And understand that fear is the father of all of your defects of character. They're all traceable back to fear. And understand that fear comes from separation from God. And when you understand that, it's a natural solution to want to humbly ask God to remove that fear and everything that comes with it. And once you do that, you'll be confronted with the paradox. The paradox. I wrote down what a paradox means because I suffer from CRS. I mean, can't remember shit. Let me tell you what a paradox is. Right? I got it here somewhere. A paradox is the seemingly contradictory statement that may nonetheless be true. The paradox between 7 and 8 is, I go to God and ask God to help me, and God tells me to get with the harm that I brought to you. And in doing that, I'll help myself. Because I can't get better till I want for my brother, till I want for my sister, what I want for myself. I can't go to God talking about I believe in Almighty God the Creator, and when I'm unwilling to correct the harm I've done to His creation. Paradox there. It's talking about becoming responsible. A step of responsibility. It's talking about
talking about losing my victim status. And then it's about addressing amends to the harm in proportion to the harm that was caused. If you neglected your children, don't just try to throw dollars at them. They're emotionally thirsty. They say love is time, attention, and discipline. Give them some time. Give them some attention. And be disciplined about it. Then you can say you love them. Don't throw sneakers at them. Don't do it like that. And get a 10th step in your life. A checkup from the neck up. In step 10 it says we get the privilege of thinking back. Get the privilege of thinking back. 10 is a deep step. If you really want your recovery to take off, work a fear step 10. We talk about the steps have to be written in order, but 10 is tricky. Because you better get with 10 from the day you come here. We tell you they got to be worked in order, but you really need to get with 10. Because we tell you in code language to work 10. Avoid people, places, and things. Because in order to get fucked, first you got to get in position. That's code language for step 10. Don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. That's code language for step 10. Pick up the IP, live in the program. That's code language for step 10. And I thoroughly believe if you work a judicious step 10, you won't have to work a million four steps. Where you gonna get all that material from? If you're working a 10th step like you're supposed to, well, I'm working my 12th, 4th step. Leave it alone. I will leave it alone. And 11th step is a beautiful step. Seeking through prayer. Prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life from the highest possible point of view. Trying to look at life from God's vantage point. Understanding that you've been blessed with generosity of spirit. When you've been blessed with generosity of spirit, you don't have to respond in life like other people do. More is expected of you. You have these spiritual principles that you can apply. And you can tell when a person is seeking through prayer and meditation because their spirit becomes awake. The literature says they break out in frequent acts of smiling. They laugh. They love themselves and others. They find great joy and beauty in their surroundings. They don't run around talking about woe is me. Whatever pleases God pleases them. They don't run around any longer talking about the bad hand that they've been dealt. My sponsor said, listen, let me ask you something. Once when I was complaining, he said, what makes you think that God's perfect will isn't being done right now? Are you still coming out of that not really bag? You only want God's will to be done if it comports with your will. So on a sneak tip, you really haven't left room for God. You're still working your will on a sneak tip. Meditation is just listening for God's answers. If you really want to hear God's answers, sometime go to a meeting. Go to a convention. God speaks through people. Just like you. That's why it's so important for us to be around one another. Because we can't discount our message to one another. It's not like we're hearing some new stuff up in here. We just tell one another the same thing that we heard from mom, that we heard from dad. The only difference was we didn't want to hear it from them. You understand? So when we come here, we can hear one another. You can hear the person because what comes from the heart reaches the heart. Because we speak through the medium of feelings. So it doesn't matter whether the person speaking is black, person speaking is white, person speaking is HIV positive or negative. The person speaking has a bunch of time, little time. Of course, truth said in a whisper rings true. We come together in a spirit of not judging, preaching and moralizing with one another. It's not the place for that. Wouldn't that be something? Misfits judging misfits. This is a big boy step. It's a big girl step because of that little four-letter word in the middle of it. Only. If you want to talk about reaching a point where the only thing you want is knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out, you better do some work. It takes a lot of spiritual work to get to that point where you can say, honestly and sincerely, if it pleases God, it pleases me. If the mate gotta go. Go forth, be well. God bless you. One door closes, another one opens. Unless you're the kind of addict who chooses to catch hell in the hallway. And the 12th step talks about when you get the good news and we're promised good news, because it says having had. If you know anything about this English language, that means having had a spiritual working awakening as a result of these steps. If you throw up the equal sign, means if you work these steps, you will have a spiritual awakening. So having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message. And a lot of times we gloss over certain words in that step. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That's Narcotics Anonymous steps. We try to carry this message. Not a hybrid message. Not an and a message. And that's important, because it's important for each of us to give a nice, crisp, clean message to the newer members, just like it was given to us. I want to close with a couple of stories, and they kind of relate to, again, our topic, Serenity Fest. Serenity celebration, serenity tranquility, and all that goes along with the understanding of that. Once there was a little girl whose father was a captain of a big ocean liner. And it was out in the middle of the sea, and a big raging storm came up. It was a terrible storm, and everybody started scurrying around and grabbing life vests and jockeying for position in case they were going to have to get on the lifeboat, and except for the captain's little daughter, who was in the middle of the ballroom on the ship just playing, and everybody was running past, and then somebody stopped and said, "Little girl, don't you realize that we're in the midst of a terrible storm?" And she said, "It's all right. My daddy is the captain of this ship, and he told me that as long as we batten down the hatches and don't let the water get on the inside, the sky will clear, the thunder will stop, the sea will calm, and once again it'll be smooth sailing." So anytime you find your peace and serenity broken, just remember that as long as you don't let those feelings and that thinking take root on the inside, this too will pass for you. And my second story is about this little boy who grew up in a disadvantaged neighborhood with no playgrounds, no swimming pool, nothing to do. A little neighborhood that was surrounded by a forest. And in this forest there were these big giant gorillas, right? Some of my friends know this story. And
So the little boys didn't have nothing to do. So they said, let's create our own sport. What is the sport? The sport of gorilla hunting. We're going to be gorilla hunters. Now this was deep because, mind you, none of them had ever seen a successful gorilla hunter. Everybody that ever went to the forest to hunt gorillas wound up in jails and institutions or dead. But when they asked the little boy, they said, do you want to be engaged in the sport of gorilla hunting? Because he had no self-acceptance. He was hooked up in trying to get little garden variety acceptance. And he said, yes. And you know that. Even though he was scared to death. Kind of like when some of us use for the first time. So because he wanted to be down, not just around, because he wanted to be Joe Banana, one of the bunch, he went home, he got his father's truck, his father's gun, without permission, he went to the forest, and he walked into the forest, and he said, I'm going to smoke the first gorilla I see. I'm going to shoot me the first gorilla I see. And he kept talking like that to himself as he walked into the jungle, the forest. And pretty soon he felt a tap on his shoulder. And he said, oh my God, who is that? And the voice said, it's me, Gorilla. He said, I didn't even hear you coming. He said, that's because I'm cunning, baffling, and insidious. I'm progressive, incurable, and fatal. And I defy detection, diagnosis, and treatment. And one other thing you need to know is this. Anytime you set foot in this forest, not maybe, not sometimes, but I always resurface. He said, having said that, now, young man, you find yourself in the grip of a hopeless gorilla dilemma. He said, what's a gorilla dilemma? He said, you got two choices. Choice number one, either I can maul you to death, or choice number two, I can fuck you in the ass. That's the gorilla talking, that ain't me. Anybody that's what the gorilla said. I don't talk like that. That's what the gorilla said that he did. The gorilla said, you know the gorilla said that, right? So he said, what are you going to do? So the guy said, oh, goddamn, old boy, he gave it up to the gorilla. The gorilla tore his ass up. It was ugly. And he was limping out the forest. And he said, you know, I know what I did wrong. I didn't take a big enough gun in there with me. Kind of like when you used and you was all disgusted and you said, you know what, the next time I'm going to buy more in the beginning. Where I made my mistake was going back and forth all night. I should have took a bigger bankroll with me. That's where I messed up. So that was his thinking. He went back and got a bigger gun and he went back into the forest, and just like foretold, the gorilla reappeared, tapped him on the shoulder, and said, you know the drill. The guy said, oh, goddamn. This time the gorilla tore him a new asshole. And he limped out the forest. He said, nah, I'm mad. Kind of like when you get kicked out the spot, when your money run out, and you tell yourself, they don't know who they just kicked out. I'll be back. I'm going to show them. I'm going to get some more money and come back in there and show them who they kicked out. So that's what he did. He went back and got this real big super duper double barrel laser pump shotgun thing. And he set one foot in the forest, felt the tap on his shoulder. Gorilla said, that's right. I told you I was progressive. And I know you know the drill. But before we get started, I just want to ask you one question. And the guy said, what? He said, you ain't in it for the sport anymore, are you? And the moral of the story is this. Newer members who've been here for a while, anybody that's within the sound of my voice, if you got here even as a curiosity seeker, somebody sent you a postcard,
If you have made it to within the sound of my voice, know this, you are right now in attic heaven. This is as good as it gets for us. And if, through the grace of God, you are so blessed and so fortunate to be given a chance to live two lives in one lifetime, and you get to where you hear the life-saving message of Narcotics Anonymous, and with all that, decide to go back out there in the dead world and test the waters, just remember, you ain't in it for the sport no more. If I've said anything that was uplifting, inspiring, or informative, credit it to the God of my understanding. If I said anything that was off-color, offensive, or just in your mind, poor taste, that was me. I'm an addict. My name is Usman. Thanks for listening.